Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of one of the most action-packed weekends of viewing I've had in a long time. We, of course, had UFC Nashville, which we went 9-3 on predictions and 5-1 on the main card. I mean, we are killing it. We're 184-92 on the year. That's right. Our quest to be plus 100 is now 8 away, which we've been doing. This is one of the best years of predictions I've been having. And you've seen Nashville had a lot of excitement, a lot of stuff for the future. We're going to be covering everything on today's episode. As well, we have some new UFC fights to talk to you all about. Nothing too big, but still some notable ones. We have had a massive weekend of wrestling. I'm talking women's wrestling. I'm talking NBC wrestling. I'm talking AEW wrestling. We are going to be recapping all of it, of everything that I was able to watch and see. And WWE Women's Evolution just ended, I kid you not, 5 minutes ago. Shocking ending. Excellent job by WWE. Also, have a review of Squid Game Season 3. I certainly have my thoughts. It is a spoiler review, so if you don't want to find out what happens in Squid Game Season 3, then skip over that portion. But then come back later to this episode 205 and be like, hey, this is what Zach's thoughts on and Squid Games were. So, without a doubt, let's dive on into everything because it's 9:30 at night and I plan on getting up at 6:50 in the morning, which actually isn't too bad in hindsight. But I know I need to get up earlier if I want to be more productive with my day. But yeah, let's start off today's episode with how we always do with new UFC fights, courtesy of Big Marcel, always breaking all the big news. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. He drops all the news. First up, UFC Noche, of course, in San Antonio, Texas, September 13th. Lightweight action as Claudio Puelles finally back in action as he takes on Joaquim Silva. Good unranked lightweight matchup here. You know, Claudio Puelles has always been someone with potential. I mean, he reached a point where he was taking on Dan Hooker, but he just has a very ground-heavy approach, and that has hurt him in the past. And as for Joaquim Silva, his biggest career accomplishment is almost knocking out Armas Rukim in round number two of their matchup, which happened back in, gosh, I want to say 22, 21. It was a while ago, but that's kind of where he peaked. As for this one, I think Claudio Puelles gets him with a little knee bar or something and ends it early. That's my honest opinion of this one, but good prelim matchup for UFC Noche. Here's a matchup September 27th in Perth, Australia. That's right. UFC is heading back to Perth September 27th. I have a sneaking suspicion that Dan Hooker may be headlining against the man we just mentioned, Armin Sarukian. But they can also have anyone headline that card. There is a lot of good Australian fighters on the card, but you got a little South Korean and a Brazilian matchup here in the featherweight division as Duho Choi takes on Daniel Santos. My boy Duho Choi back in action. I love him, man. I love me a little Duho Choi. And as for Daniel Santos, I mean, he's had a decent UFC run, not many wins, but I mean, he's not like he's a bad fighter, and I do think Duho Choi gets this one done in this case, but a decent fight was to be on the UFC Perth prelims. But I'm more excited about all the potential fighters we could get on that UFC Perth card. I mean, if I just take a quick little peruse of the rankings, I don't think Robert Whittaker makes a quick turnaround. I think if Izzy's fighting, they would have announced it. However, I would love to see maybe like an Israel Adesanya versus, gosh, I don't even know, I'll be honest, I would love to see Izzy fight, but I got no one for him to fight. So I'm really thinking that they do Dan Hooker in this spot. Dan Hooker in the main event would probably be the best option. As I look at the rankings, there actually isn't that many. Maybe a Kaikar of France turnaround, he takes on Manil Cape. I don't know. UFC Paris, though, they have a fun lightweight mount as Fares Zayam, who's riding a 6-fight winning streak, I believe he's on. It's either 5 or 6. Dude is on the run of a lifetime. I think it's 5, actually. He takes on Cal Fernandez. Cal Fernandez, the Brazilian, I mean, hit or miss with this guy. And I honestly think they're just trying to bump up Fares Zayam's winning streak here, because certainly Cal Fernandez is not as tough as the last guy that Fares was taking on. But Fares is from Paris. This will be on the main card. And Zayam, I think, is ready for a ranked opponent, but clearly the UFC does not. Let's keep adding to his win streak and get this guy in a little run before he gets into the rankings. August 2nd, UFC Vegas 108 has some veteran welterweight going down as Neil Magny takes on Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. Neil Magny, of course, coming off of his, I believe the last time he fought was in Michael Morales, faceplanted him in a main event. I don't know if he snuck in another fight after that, but this dude is a 34 fight UFC veteran. This will be UFC fight 35 for Neil Magny. It takes on Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, who's just knocked out by Chidi Inchukani, I think it was. So I'm really rooting for Neil Magny here. Neil Magny always tends to do well against unranked competitors as opposed to ranked competition. So we're going to ride with Neil Magny for this matchup. But yeah, good bout between these veterans. Probably will be on the main card to that UFC Vegas 108. UFC Shanghai is adding another fight, which goes down August 23rd. Yes, I was trying to remember. As Rong Zhu in the lightweight division takes on Austin Hubbard. And if you didn't know, Rong Zhu versus Cody Steele is in my top five fights of the year so far. Okay, that fight was utterly insane. It was the highlight of UFC 312. It was the only good thing to come out of UFC 312, and it was Rong Zhu and Cody Steele. And now they're giving up Austin Hubbard. They just want to see Austin Hubbard get messed up. And you best bet we're rooting for Rong Zhu in this one. I don't know if I thought Rong Zhu fought at bantamweight for some reason, but now this dude fights at lightweight. Absolute dog. Cannot wait to watch him compete his next bout. And as for the final fight announcement we have is actually a top five matchup in the most action-packed division in the UFC, the women's bantamweight division, as the number two and number four women throw down Hakuel Penton and Norma Dumont. And I swear, Norma Dumont, if you get out-aced by Hakuel Penton, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to personally send you some hate mail because she should most definitely win this. I'm being dead honest. Like, come on. Hakuel Penton is on her way out. I'm pretty sure she turns 40 in 3 years, maybe even 2 years. It's time for her to go. But that goes down at UFC Noche. It will definitely be on the main card of that. If Norma Dumont wins, I'm being dead honest, she's taking on the winner of Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison, which I do believe will be Kayla Harrison. So I believe Kayla Harrison's first title defense against someone actually in the rankings, not named Amanda Nunes, will be against Norma Dumont. But that's only if Norma can get it done. So fingers crossed that she can, because if she ends up losing, I'm going to be very sad. But yeah, a lot of big fights going down. We're going to UFC Noche in San Antonio, Texas. We're going to Shanghai. We're going to Perth. We're going to Paris. The UFC is going all over, and I am all here for it. And speaking of going places, you guys ever been to South Korea? Well, if you go to South Korea, make sure you don't accept an invitation to compete in a game on a random island, or else you'll end up in the Squid Games. That's right, guys. Season 3 of Squid Games did drop, and I was able to binge it with Lexi over, I think, 2 days? Might have been 3 days. I think we did it in 2 days. It's only 6 episodes, but I mean, a triumphant ending to a show, which I found out that the director, the creator of it, Hwang Dong-hyuk, I believe is how you say his name, he only played it for one season. He only played it for one season, but the show was so freaking successful, he had to write a second season. As he was writing the second season, he realized, I won't be able to fit it all in. So season 3 is technically part 2 of season 2. I'm going to be honest. And it was emotional. You know, it was sad. This is a little spoiler review I'm going to give. So there were 6 episodes, and episodes 1 and 2 are kind of the aftermath of the ending of season 2. And you get introduced to the, I think it was 3rd game? I mean 4th game. Do they do 5 or 6? I don't know. I can't remember what games they do, but there's a final round. There's a, I wonder if it says in the descriptions. But anyways, I think it's the 3rd game, and it is hide and seek. All right, except this hide and seek is played with knives and keys. That's right. The 3rd or 4th game, whatever it is, this game is where you have some hiders and some chasers, if you will. And the chasers have knives, and their goal is to kill you, and you have to survive. And you have keys, and you can go into different rooms. And it was emotional. It was emotional. There were people that died here that I didn't think were going to die here. It was shocking. It was really shocking, and it was emotional and gory. I'll tell you, gory. And the themes they dive into here, and the introduction of the VIPs. I mean, the VIPs this season are just pure evil, pure greed. I mean, they don't even view the people in these games as human. It was utterly insane. And then you get into right around episode 3, where, you know, Jun-ho, he's the detective. He's closing in on the island, and it's in these episodes 3 to 4 that you learn that the captain is actually working for the, which we had learned that last season, but they find out that he is working for the Squid Games people, and he kills the whole team. They kill the captain. It gets absolutely crazy. And then, I mean, something that happened in the first second episode of season 2 was that Jun-hee, I think it is, has her baby, and it is just absolutely insane. Absolutely insane that she had a baby. All plot things or whatever we can throw out the window, but the fact that there's a baby in here was just crazy. Just freaking nuts. And it just man, it's the entire season is just so much goes down in these six episodes. And, you know, the third game is Jump Rope, which is wild. And, of course, the main guy of the show, Ji-hun, he is able to save the baby, but Joong-gi dies. And, you know, you see this epic battle with him and the, I'm trying to think... What the frickin', basically the baby's dad, the baby daddy, between him and Ji-hun in the final episode. And the final episode is surreal. Final episode is surreal. It's played, it's the Squid Games, but it is a version where you play it high up in the air. I'm talking like 50 feet in the air, and you have to push the others off. And it is just, oh, it is something. It is something. The entire season, I won't actually spoil too much, but, you know, the finale. If you will, the finale, Ji-hun learns who the front man is. He learns it was his friend from the whole episodes from the first, second season, if you will. And, you know, he basically gives him a knife and an option to go kill everyone, which is what the creator of the game from season one had given to him, who that's how he eventually knew he was primed to take over as the new leader of the games. And, you know, Ji-hun resists, and you see a smile from the front man. And then, you know, we get to the finale, and... You know, basically with the game is you have to step on a, there's three different platforms, if you will, and you have to step on a button to start the game, and one person has to be pushed off on every platform. And we get to the final platform, and it's the baby daddy versus Ji-hun, and he's holding the baby, and he basically, Ji-hun kills him, you know, to save the baby, and then he realizes he has to press the button, and he hasn't started the game, and the series ends with Ji-hun sacrificing himself to save the baby. And he basically says, humans are not, I think it's cows, humans are not sports, humans are not your entertainment, and it's powerful, and it's impactful, and he sacrifices himself. And the worst part of it is he didn't have to sacrifice himself, because almost just as he kills himself, Jun-ho is able to find the island, and he goes in, he breaks in, he's killing people, and, you know, he gets one final look at his brother, you know, one final look at his brother who's the front man, and then the entire island blows up. Everyone escapes, and all the evidence is destroyed, and a crazy thing, right? As the Coast Guard arrived, they called the Coast Guard, and right as it arrives, it is completely ended. It was, wow. Pissed me off, made me emotional, but Ji-hun's death was just, you couldn't move. You couldn't move. It was a shocking final season. A lot of good subplots, which I won't get into, but really amazing. Really amazing. And do I think it's the best season? Here's the thing. It's season one and season two and three. Two and three are the same season, and I'm going to go with season one being better. But I have season one as like a 10 out of 10 first season, and I'm going to say that season two is an 8.9 out of 10. I'm not going to give it a 9, I'm going to give it an 8.9. I do think killing, you know, I always say this, that I love when shows kill main characters because it adds an emotional depth to it, but I just feel like there's so much more to explore with this show. The South Korean element has come to an end, and you end the show with Ji-hun getting his daughter in America, getting all the money, living out in Los Angeles, all the money from the baby, and the baby the front man gives to Jo-hun or whatever, his brother, the detective, and everyone just kind of has to go on with their lives, and it's kind of sad. And then you see the front man driving through Los Angeles, and who does he see down an alleyway? None other than Cate Blanchett portraying a... whoever the people were, the recruiters of the game, played a game with a homeless man, and it basically sets it up for the Squid Games to come to America, which David Fincher, whoever directed the Fight Club movie, which we just recently talked about in one of our past episodes, he's going to be directing an American version of Squid Games. I hope you get a cameo from the front man, and I just hope that we're able to take down Squid Games, because, you know, I get the sneaking suspicion that this goes on in real life. I know you're going to get conspiracy theories out there, but I just get a sneaking suspicion that this goes on, maybe not to the same extent as the Squid Games, but certainly if there are pedophile rings out there like the Epsteins of the world, there's definitely people out there that are having people play games to win a large sum of money. It is... The world is crazy, and, you know, I think Squid Games kind of unveils this. But, 83% have liked this show. I mean, crazy to think this came out in 2021, 4 years later. We're finally wrapping it up. But simply amazing. It's a great show, and I highly recommend watching Squid Games. It's so funny because Squid Games is completely subtitles with the American... I don't watch the American dub. I don't like that. I watch with the subtitles, and it's so watchable for me. I don't know why. Maybe it's because Lexi always uses subtitles on shows and whatever, so I'm pretty trained for it. But, Yeah, Squid Game Season 3 gets an 8.9 out of 10 for me. And I'm just kind of sad it's over because it is one of my favorite shows. It is going to go up there in my top 10 favorite shows, I think. Although, I do have a lot of favorite shows, so we'll have to kind of track over all of that. I got to give it to Succession, man. Succession sneakily snuck into my top 5 over the last month or so. But anyways, that's enough about Squid Games. Go check it out for yourselves. We got a lot of wrestling to talk about. You know, for the timestamp, I'm not even going to put it down as AEW, Saturday Night's Main Event, Evolution. We're just going to go in chronological order here. So, first off, AEW. So, AEW, if you did not know, is kind of the... How can I compare this? It is the... I don't want to say G League to the NBA. No, it is... It is like... I'm trying to think of a good comparison. It is basically... Okay, if we use a UFC comparison, it is the PFL to the UFC. There we go. It is the PFL to the UFC. I'm sure for most of my viewers, that's what you're going to correlate that to. But yes, the PFL, of course, is the next biggest thing compared to the UFC. It won't catch the UFC, is what you're saying. AEW had their WrestleMania, their Super Bowl, their NBA Finals event, AEW All in Texas. And it went on from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. I actually think it went past 7 p.m. This was like a 5 or 6 hour pay-per-view. It was insane. They had 12 matchups, 3 on the prelims. It was wild. It was absolutely wild. And there are a lot of names on here that used to wrestle in WWE. I do want to say is that you had Big Boom AJ, that is right, from the Costco guys, teaming with Kyle O'Frickin' Riley, used to be an absolute killer in NXT, winning a matchup. Winning a matchup. Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. You had FTR on the prelims. Those dudes used to be tag team champions. And they're one of the best tag teams, I think, from professional wrestling. But just crazy there on the prelims. But this, all these matchups are just so long. And one thing that people point out is that AEW is much more about in-ring compared to storytelling. Obviously, they mix in storytelling. But they really, really focus on the in-ring action. And you get things going. And you have the ops defeating the Death Riders. Which, by the way, in the Death Rider, Cesaro, Claudio Castagnola from WWE. Crazy to see him there. You also had Samoa Joe. Then you have MJF winning a Casino Gauntlet match, defeating Roderick Strong. You know what? MJF is one of the AEW poster boys. That was a 35-minute match. Are you freaking kidding me? After that, Dustin Rhodes wins the AEW TNT Championship. I was unable to see any of these. I saw some highlights. Did see that Adam Cole basically unofficially retired, which sucks. Dude has the greatest NXT match of all time against Johnny Gargano. You guys have to go watch that. I think it went down in 2019, if I'm not mistaken. Absolutely legendary. Then Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay defeating the Young Bucks. Young Bucks are one of the most famous tag teams in professional wrestling history, regarded as one of the best. And Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay are two more of the poster boys of the AEW brand. 25-minute match. Then you had a women's Casino Gauntlet match. 27 minutes. Then you have the Hurt Syndicate, which, by the way, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, with MVP and MJF at ringside, defeating the Patriarchy, which had Christian Cage in it. That is right, Christian from WWE. And then in a post-match attack, they were going to beat down on Christian and Edge returns Adam Copeland. Absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. I wasn't able to catch any of this. You know, then you had Toni Storm defeating Mercedes Moné. Mercedes Moné is Sasha Banks from WWE. And by the way, Toni Storm might be one of the best women wrestlers I've ever seen. I watched the highlights of that 24 minutes. And then I sat through Okada versus Kenny Omega. That's right, Kazuchika Okada definitely botched that versus Kenny Omega. And they were unifying the AEW Continental Championship and the AEW International Championship into the AEW Unified Championship. 30 minutes and 32 seconds of just technical wrestling. Now, the funny thing is, I had no idea what either their finishers were, so I had no idea when it was going to end. But it was a fantastic match, and I was heavily surprised. You know, I didn't really know much about them. I just knew they were two of the best wrestlers on the planet, and they delivered. Then we got to the main event. Now, the main event, this was basically main event of WrestleMania. This was basically the last 5 minutes of the Super Bowl. This is what everyone tuned in for, and it had Jon Moxley, otherwise known as Dean Ambrose in WWE, taking on Hangman Adam Page. And Hangman Adam Page was kind of coming into this as the underdog, as the hero, as the kind of redeemer, if you will. And they had a Texas death match for the AEW World Championship, the biggest championship in AEW. 35 minutes, 55 seconds. The longest match of the night. 35 minutes and 55 seconds. Insane. Didn't even feel that long. didn't even feel that long, but the entrances were really hype, and I was ready to get going, and I had no idea what a Texas Deathmatch was. Little did I know, it was just vulgarity. This was the most, like, gruesome thing I've ever seen in professional wrestling. So, not even 5 minutes in, you have Dean Ambrose caught in an omoplata, for MMA terms, which basically legs wrapped around the head, like, on the mat. And Hangman Jack, whatever his name is taking a fork and jamming it into Dean Ambrose's head, or John Moxley's head, and I'm going, what in the world? Then, they have tables of barbed wire. They send each other through that. They then have broken glass they spread on the ring. Their bodies slamming each other on it, rubbing their hands through it. They have a barbed wire bat. They have a freaking bed of nails. I mean, this was just grisly. This was just grisly. And then you had so many people interfering. You had the Death Riders, which is John Moxley's little team, if you will. Cesaro was a part of that for some reason. Then you have Swerve Strickland running out. Will Ospreay, the Young Bucks, ran out. You had Darby Allin dropping from the ceiling. I mean, this is a dude that somebody ever is. He is one of the craziest people. Go watch Darby Allin highlights on YouTube. That man is probably the craziest professional wrestler besides John Moxley out there. And then you had Daniel Bryan returning, which, by the way, I didn't even know that, I didn't even know that Daniel Bryan was gone or whatever, but he returns, he hits John Moxley with a finisher, and then Hangman Jack wins the match by literally hanging Dean Ambrose with an iron chain wrapped around his neck over the ring post and Dean Ambrose tapping, and wow, it was so hype. It was a legendary match. I do have to say, I was highly interested. I was highly interested in this, and I didn't even know what was going on at times. I didn't know any stories, any plot lines, but truly, I tell you, just tuning in for a main event, it felt big. The crowd is massive. They filled that Arlington, Texas stadium. They did a great job with that, and AEW All In. I didn't watch the full thing, thankfully, but the final two matches were amazing, especially that main event. The Texas Death Match was phenomenal, if you will. AJ Styles, phenomenal. Highly recommend you guys checking that out, but not for any children under the age of 15. I mean, that was vulgar. That was just brutal. But after that, I transcended into Saturday night's main event. And so I was watching the main event, of course, which, by the way, the main event started, and by the time it was over, we'd already been through the first two matchups of Saturday night's main event. Saturday night's main event, going down to Atlanta, Georgia, and they had Goldberg. And the main event, that's right, this was built all around Goldberg's retirement. Now, you only had four matchups, and you get the night going. Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre, and I've come to learn that WWE is building towards this feud, and by the way, they already have a match confirmed for SummerSlam, where Randy Orton is teaming with Jelly Roll, and Drew McIntyre is teaming with Logan Paul. I mean, just what are we doing? I'm sorry. It's not that I hate Jelly Roll. I just have no desire to see him compete in the ring, and this is from someone who is not big on celebrity involvement in matches. Like, don't get me wrong, Travis Scott coming out was super meme-ish, all right, Bad Bunny was awesome, you know, I remember, you know, the early 2010s days, like, Floyd Mayweather being involved in stuff, but I just, you know, like, Speed coming to the Rumble is okay, but Jelly Roll in an official match, and we're using Logan Paul, Andrew McIntyre, which, by the way, Logan Paul might be one of the best heels in the company. Don't know why we're wasting him here. Drew McIntyre just returned. Like, why are we having him lose after one RKO? And Randy Orton, this is not the direction I thought we were going to go with Randy Orton. But, yeah, run-of-the-mill match, 8.5 minutes, not even, 8:26. And, yeah, you have Jelly Roll getting hit with a claymore, Randy Orton getting mad, telling Nick Aldis they should make a match. And now they have a match. And all I can hope is that, which, by the way, is not going to happen. They're going to have Jelly Roll and Randy Orton win. But I would love to see Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul win, and all three of them get involved in a WWE Championship picture. But this was just a boring start to Saturday night's main event, but it's like nothing you can really complain about, because it's not like it was bad. It was more just like, this is the direction, so pass on that. Following that, you then set up Naomi and Jade Cargill's No Holds Barred match for Evolution, which was going to be going down the next following day, which is actually today, Sunday the 13th, and it was unveiled that Bianca Belair is going to be the special guest referee, and that little brawl right there and set up for the next night was probably one of the more entertaining moments of this event. Then you had Solo Sikoa versus Jimmy Uso for the United States Championship, and you got the exact match you could expect of Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso. And someone pointed out that Jimmy Uso has a more versatile moveset than Jey Uso, and now I can't unsee it, and it's so true. And I really hope they give Jey Uso the United States Championship. It would feel so, so good if they did that, but They didn't do it here. Solo Sikoa, with the help of Tala Tonga, the 7-foot giant they've added, and even a little bit of JC Mateo and Tonga Loa, help Solo Sikoa win and then beat down on Jimmy Uso. And then who runs out to save the day? Jacob Fatu. He's back. Oh my goodness. And Jacob Fatu cleans house. And now I think we're going to build to Jacob Fatu versus Solo Sikoa for the United States Championship at SummerSlam. Maybe we do that. But as for Jimmy Uso and, you know, Tala Tonga, maybe they have a little program. Tonga Loa and JC Mateo are clearly just background brutes. I don't really know the angle we're good to hear, but for having a two-night SummerSlam, having 5 to 7 matches on each night, there's definitely some filler matches we can use. So we'll see what happens here. But yeah, this was just a run-of-the-mill 10-minute, 49-second match. It is what is. Then we got to what was the talking point of this event. I kid you not, Goldberg's retirement wasn't even the talking point of this match or this entire card, Saturday Night's main event. It was LA Knight and Seth Rollins. We're giving us a very good match. 11 minutes and 38 seconds is how long it lasted. This was going great. This was easily, and I mean, we knew LA Knight was good, but he was really shining here. And then Seth freaking Rollins, you know, Seth freaking Rollins decided to try and turn back the clock to his days from a decade ago, and he goes for a flip off the top, and when he lands, he tweaks his leg, and I can tell that maybe he thinks something just kind of bad may have happened, but then he goes, does a backflip off the ropes, lands on it, and completely falls down, and he falls to the corner with Paul Heyman. The refs get out there, an audible is clearly called, LA Knight hits his finisher, pins him, and then Seth Rollins is helped to the back. So LA Knight wins. You know, I predicted that would happen, but just not really happy with the, you know, way it went down. So Seth Rollins is injured, and it was just announced, actually, that we're going to have a gauntlet match to see who will challenge Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship at SummerSlam. You have Bron Breakker in there, Penta, Sami Zayn, CM Punk, LA Knight. So I think Seth Rollins is unfortunately injured, and the only benefit that I can give Seth Rollins is that, you know, you recover, you heal up, and your big return will be you cashing in your contract. And who knows what the landscape of WWE will be when that happens, because he can hold on this thing for over a year. So even if Seth Rollins sits out till next year's Royal Rumble, next year's WrestleMania, dare I say even next year's Money in the Bank, he could be, you know, do something crazy, which is return from injury and cash in. So, man, really sucks that Seth Rollins is injured. That knee has always ruined his career. And unlike, you know, I'm trying to think of who I could compare Seth Rollins to. Sort of like how Paul George was never the same. Seth Rollins is never the same, but unlike Paul George, he was still able to win championships and main event the biggest shows. Not to knock off. I feel like I'm just giving a stray to Paul George, which I'm not trying to. But yeah, this was unfortunate, but LA Knight came out looking like a star, so we have to look at the positives. Can't always look at the negatives. And with this, it clearly changed the entire way the rest of the show was going to go, because Gunther and Goldberg went 15 minutes and 20 seconds. Some people had it clocked in at 1488. Wikipedia right now has it at 1520. And I mean, I was so surprised. I mean, they were coming out with 30 minutes left, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're gonna give us a 30-minute match. Mind you, they cut to commercial like 3 times, including the match ended at 9:57, and it cut to a 2-minute commercial. Literally comes back for a sub-30-second Goldberg retirement speech. It was pretty comical. I couldn't lie. I turned it off right after that. But yeah, Gunther brought the best you could get out of Goldberg, who, by the way, if I could get an age check on Goldberg, when was Buddy born here real quick? He was born 1966, so he's 58 years old. No business being in there. Okay, I actually felt bad for him. I felt like he was almost forced to do this, and it kind of hurt. You know, it kind of hurt. I mean, he took some bumps, though, too. I will say he did a jackknife powerbomb. He did a spear. He went through the barricade. He slid outside the bottom rope and landed. I mean, he's taking some chops from Gunther. And they did all the nostalgic moves. You know, there's at one point when he hit the his son jumped the barricade because Gunther was taunting him, and then Gunther basically got countered by Goldberg, got hit with a spear, got hit with a jackknife. And then after the jackknife, I legit think Goldberg was combobulated because he didn't go for the pin right away, and you could tell Gunther was trying to get him to go for the pin without like making it obvious. And then Gunther kicks out, they give us that tease, and then immediately Gunther wraps in a submission. Oh, Goldberg is just about to escape, and then he passes out. I do have to say that the Gunther finisher here was actually good, and I usually hate Gunther's finisher. I hate fake submissions in professional wrestling just because of how much UFC I watch. I like the pinfalls. I like the pinfalls. I feel like pinfalls are almost more realistic because it's like, oh my gosh, he's actually knocked out. But for the submissions, I'm like, he doesn't have an actual sleeper locked in. We're about to talk about Vitor Petrino, who had an actual sleeper locked in against Austin Lane. I don't know. That's just a little minor detail I have to observe. But yeah, Gunther retains. Dude is looking more dominant than ever. And Goldberg gets his flowers. Can't even lie, Goldberg. Good retirement match, if you will. And it puts Gunther over, which I think was the whole idea at the end of the day. And unfortunately, I have heard that John Cena's final match is going to be on a Saturday night's main event in Boston. I'm really hoping that's not the case. It's looking like it is billed to be the case. But, I mean, I got to tell you, these Saturday's main events cards, they are just not good. They're not good. They're not good for... Because, I mean, the last one was good, but this one was bad. This one was rough. And I do think the main issue is the commercials on NBC. I think that is a massive issue that you deal with. I feel like it limits the abilities of the talent. And I also feel like they don't know what to do with some of these events. And this event was primarily ran to counteract AEW, and it failed because I was tuned in for the main event and waited for the main event of AEW to finish, waited for the celebration to finish before I tuned in to Saturday Night's main event, and Saturday Night's main event was so dull, I just had no interest in it. Which, by the way, Seth Rollins getting injured, nothing you can do about that. Goldberg, you know, not knowing what condition he was going to be when he stepped in, that's out of our control. But Saturday Night's main event, look, it wasn't good, but the positives I can bring out here for each match are Randy Orton actually making the RKO look good with it only being used once. Jelly Roll getting hit with a Claymore, I love to see. Solo Sikoa having a successful title defense is good. LA Knight coming out of this looking good. And Gunther looking like a true world champion. Where do we go next from here? I mean, I can see LA Knight versus Gunther. I could see maybe Gunther versus CM Punk. I could see both of those. As for Solo Sikoa, like I said, Jacob Fatu, and we already know what's going on with Orton and McIntyre. But yeah, Saturday night's main event, we will definitely leave in the past. But something that just went down, I kid you not, 30 minutes ago, was WWE Evolution, and it was good. Okay, I gotta give it to you guys. It was good. Now, I only was able to catch in full the Women's Battle Royal and the main event for the Women's World Championship, but from everything I've heard, kicked off the night, triple threat match for the Women's Intercontinental Championship, Becky Lynch, Bayley, Lyra Valkyra, it was a banger. It was a banger from what I heard. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. Now, one quick observation I do want to add is that Saturday night's main event actually outsold Evolution by 5,000 tickets in the same arena. I do want to say that is kind of a problem, but then again, I mean, again, it's an all-women's event, but honestly, like, they made it an all-women's event, but these women delivered. But yeah, Becky Lynch retains against Bayley and Lyra Valkyra. Every single one of these matches these women have had post-WrestleMania has been a banger. I would expect nothing less. Now, where do you go from here? I think Becky Lynch pivots to maybe a program with someone like Nikki Bella, maybe another mid-carder, some even like another main event player. But I think Bayley and Lyra Valkyra should have a singles feud. That's really where I think you should go from here. But great, great option of having this open. These three are absolutely amazing. And I would compare it to the WrestleMania 41 match where the women main event kicked off the show, Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, and Bianca Belair. If a match like that isn't main eventing or the co-main event, just have it open the show. Sort of like that Michael Chandler, Justin Gaethje 2021 UFC 268 style where, you know, this is going to be a banger. Let's have it kick off the show and get everyone hyped up. So that was amazing. Following that, you had the NXT Women's Championship on the line. A little 10-minute matchup. JC Jane taking on Jordynne Grace. And you have a Blake Monroe heel turn. Which, by the way, Blake Monroe has got to be the best addition WWE has made. She's going to run NXT when they finally give her the Women's Championship. But yeah, Jordynne Grace betrayed by Blake Monroe. Oh no, now they're going to feud. And JC Jane will go on to TNA. I don't know if it's going to be Worlds Collide or something. And she's going to be taking on the TNA Women's Champion for Unification bout, so who knows what's going to go on with that. But yeah, tough stuff for Jordynne Grace, but Blake Monroe heel turn, love to see it. Then something super shocking, a fatal four-way match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. So not surprised that Kabuki Warriors lost. Asuka and Kairi Sane can go do programs with potentially Io Sky. Not surprised Sol Ruka and Zarya lost, you know, they're a little NXT thing. Can't believe Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss lost to Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. I guess the Judgment Day is legit. what can we say? The Judgment Day is legit. They have now won the WWE Tag Team Championships, or World Tag Team Championships, whatever it is. They have now defended the Women's Tag Team Championship, and Dominic Mysterio is still your Intercontinental Champion, probably taking on AJ Styles at SummerSlam. I mean, Judgment Day is legit. What can we say? So, you know, Rock Rodriguez, Roxanne Perez, good for them. Good for them. As for Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, I guess they're going to go into a singles program? I don't know. Really caught me off guard. Really did. Was not expecting that, but good for them. That's all I can say. After that, the shortest match of the night, Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus. But Trish Stratus gave us 8.5 minutes of some of the best wrestling one could ask for. Because you may look at Trish Stratus and go, oh my gosh, she is a looker. She is looking banger. She looks great. She's 49 years old. Why is she in the ring with a 20-something-year-old in Tiffany Stratton? But Tiffany Stratton defending her belt, the best performance, oof, you could argue, since winning the belt, for goodness sake. But yeah. Amazing stuff here. The outfits on all the ladies tonight looking phenomenal. Good job to all the stylists in the back. I guess Tiffany Stratton gets it done. I'm excited to see her versus Jade Cargill. That is going to be a great SummerSlam matchup. But yeah, Trish Stratus, glad to see you go out here. I would hope it would be her retirement match as well. She gave us a great performance for not being in the ring for since early in the year, which was a tag team match. I don't think that counts. But yes, good job, Tiffany Stratton. Can't wait to see what you do next. After that, 11 minutes of a no-holds-barred match between Jade Cargill and Naomi with Bianca Belair as a special guest referee. I thought this was entertaining. I caught the end of it. I'll say that. I caught the end of this. Finish was Jade Cargill doing her finisher, which I don't even know what it is. Basically just face-playing someone. And she put Naomi through a table, which was awesome. Off the top rope, might I add, and Bianca Belair counts her out. I'm thinking the move here, of course, Jade Cargill using her opportunity to take on Tiffany Stratton. Bianca Belair maybe waits for the winner? Maybe she goes heel against Jade Cargill? I don't know. I really don't know the angle here, but we're going to talk about Naomi in a second, but Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill may be more intertwined than we think. I think WWE went for a pivot here at the end of the night that has shifted the entire barrier of everything, and yeah. It is going to definitely shake things up, which I am excited about. But yeah, this matchup was fine. Was the longest of the night at 11 minutes at that point. Actually, Becky Lynch gave us 16 minutes and 30 seconds in that women's Intercontinental triple threat. But yeah, good stuff there. Then the 20-woman Evolution Battle Royal for a world championship match at Clash in Paris. And turns out it was just 20. No surprise entrance. No AJ Lee. No Paige. No Brie Bella. No Legends. No. No, 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 no. So I don't think it was a bad Battle Royal, which, by the way, they had Lash Legend and Steffi Vicaris the final two. Of course, they had Nia Jax in the final three. Lola Vice was looking fantastic in this. Nikki Bella looked great. She had a premature elimination. Wasn't expecting that. You also had, someone else from NXT looking really good. Her name is, just not coming to me. Oh my gosh, where's the list of competitors in this? Kalani Jordan looked great. Julia getting eliminated by Zelina Vega is not what I wanted to see. Makes me think that they're going to continue their program. But yes, the final two, Lash Legend, Steffi Vicaris uses the Devil's Kiss to eliminate Lash Legend on the outside. Steffi Vicaris will go to Clash in Paris and get a world championship opportunity. And who is she going to be taking on? Well, none other than Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill, maybe Rhea Ripley, maybe Io Sky, or maybe this woman who I'm about to mention in a second, the main event, which, by the way, 26 minutes and 20 seconds, a phenomenal main event between Io Sky and Rhea Ripley. So many close pinfalls, so many great moves. These two, really, something felt different about this match. I think it was a main event. They made it feel important. Their move sets, they had some great kickouts. They took out the ref, which then you're like, oh my gosh, is someone going to come in? Instead, no, they brawl across the arena. Io Sky takes out Rhea Ripley on the concrete. It was brutal. They get in the ring. You then have this moment where you think Io Sky is going to win. She's hurt her ribs, and Rhea Ripley's hurt her ribs. Io Sky tries her finisher, fails. Rhea Ripley hurts her. Both women are down. And then Naomi's music hits, and you're just like, there's no way. There's no way. The pivot. We all thought it was going to be Naomi cashing in on Jade Cargill at SummerSlam, but no. Naomi cashes in here, and I do have to say, I love when cash-ins make complete sense. The entire idea of the Money in the Bank briefcase is for you to capitalize and cash in and win at the most ease. She literally runs around the ring, cashes in, no question, runs in, smacks the briefcase across Io Sky's head, throws Rhea Ripley into the turnbuckle, then does her finisher off the top rope onto Io Sky. 1, 2, 3, pinned. champion, and she looks damn good with a women's world championship. I do have to say, the belt just fits perfectly to her attire. I loved it. I loved it. So yes, Naomi is your new women's world champion. Amazing. Simply amazing. Hats off, WWE. That is how you steal and shock the evening. I thought WWE Evolution 2 was a success. I really did, and the surprise of Naomi cashing in was amazing. It was amazing. I mean, she had just lost earlier in the night. She was all banged up, and here she comes with the caution briefcase in hand, cashes in. Yeah. Yeah, that'll play. That'll play. I'll tell you that for certain. And I'm excited to see what she does next. Does she feud with Bianca Belair? Does she feud with Rhea Ripley? Io Sky? I don't know. But Naomi's heading into SummerSlam as your women's world champion. Heck yeah. Absolutely. Heck yes. Great swerve at the end. A little swerve Strickland at the end. And that's exactly what you look for with the WWE. You know, it was a pretty predictable evening. I mean, Blake Monroe obviously turned heel. Judgment Day winning was kind of a swerve. But then, yeah, Naomi saving the day, leaving us with something to talk about. But that is your entire recap of all the wrestling that went down this past weekend, a whole lot. And if you didn't know, we actually did make a YouTube video ranking every SummerSlam main event from the last 15 years. You guys should check that out. But we will be dropping our SummerSlam predictions coming up here in three weeks or something. But yeah, that's all we got for professional wrestling on today's episode. Good week of wrestling, I do gotta say. Didn't catch the Great American Bash, but Obafemi retained. That's all we need to know about that. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, I say we dive into UFC Nashville, which did go down this past Saturday, and it left us with plenty to talk about. Like I said, 9-3 on predictions. Let's get right on into it, because we had finishes from the start. Kicking off the card, we had Fatima Klein taking on Melissa Martinez. Melissa Martinez, actually one of the few sibling duos. David Martinez, her brother, fights in the UFC as well. And unfortunately for David, his sister just couldn't get it done. As Fatima Klein hit her with a nasty round 3 head kick, actually earning a performance bonus. It is so rare nowadays you see the first fight of the night getting a bonus of any regard, but Fatima Klein gets her 4th career knockout, 5th career finish. She will improve to 8-1 professionally, 2 fight winning streak in the UFC. Both of them finishes in 2025. Look out! Women's strawweight division, Fatima Klein coming through, and she was dominating her up to this point. 32 significant strikes at 17 round 1, 35-18 round 2, and it only took 2.5 minutes into round number 3 for her to land that nasty head kick. And she fainted, so she hit a jab, then faked the straight and hit her with the head kick. Oh, folded her just like that. Phenomenal. Absolutely loved him. Sorry, Melissa. Had to happen. First time she's been finished in her career. She is now 1-2 in the UFC. I'll be curious to see where she goes from here, but I mean, Fatima Klein, yes. Yes, that's all I have to say. Women's strawweight division, you look out. I'm telling you right now, look out for Fatima Klein. And for being a minus 1,000 favorite, I mean, looked like it out there. I can definitely say that for certain. I don't know where these women are going, but Melissa's going down and Fatima is going up. Going to be a lot of options out there in the women's strawweight division. You know, there's just too many. Too many women, I'll tell you, out there in the divisions to really handpick who I think these ladies could take on. Someone from a recent card, perhaps. Let me look through some of the recent MMA cards we have had as of late. UFC Atlanta, have any women's strawweights? Only women's fights. We actually haven't had a women's strawweight bout since, I want to say, oh my gosh, we've not had a women's strawweight bout in a long time. May 31st, Arlise Ardeline beat Rayana Dos Santos. Yeah, Arlise, Alice Ardeline, let's have her fight her next, just because it's the only woman's name I can find. But yeah, interesting stuff all around from Fatima Klein. Great start to the night. Got me hyped, I'll tell you that. So Fatima Klein, book her against literally anyone. I just want to see her back in action. After that, Mike Davis giving us another finish to open the night. By the way, of the 12 fights on the card, only 4 went the distance. That's right. It was a good night of fights. I'll tell you that. Mike Davis, Mitch Ramirez. Mike Davis looking like a killer out there. I'm going to be honest, I don't know where Mike Davis has been all these years, but the 32-year-old finally decided to wake up and go, you know what, I'm a minus 900 favorite, I'm in my prime, let's freaking do this. So round 1, took to the grappling, 4 minutes and 20 seconds, attempted 2 different submissions. Yeah, 10-8 in round 1. Mitch Ramirez only getting 8 significant strikes in. Round two, fought on the feet, and for Mitch Ramirez landing 43 significant strikes, Mike Davis just looked on edge, and that finishing sequence was just nasty. He overwhelmed Mitch Ramirez just in his face, hitting him body shots, face shots, body shots, face shots, leg kick, body shots, face shots. Finally dropped him to the head, landed some follow-up shots, but it was just, didn't even need him. Mike Davis getting his eighth career knockout. Phenomenal work for the Beast Bowl, and hey, don't blink, 5-1. In his last six, and that only losses to Fair Zion by decision. Yeah, Mike Davis is definitely headed towards a big opportunity in the lightweight division. I don't know, mainly against who, if we're just looking at like an unranked perspective. I mean, honestly, I feel like him and Grant Dawson could deliver a banger matchup. I feel like they may be poising Grant to fight upwards. So we'll have to see. You could even throw in the name Terrence McKinney. Could give a fun fight. Who else did we talk about? Cal Fernandez fighting Fairzaim. If Cal Fernandez beats Fairzaim, I would like to see Cal Fernandez versus Mike Davis. I think that could be a fun fight you could run. As for Mitch Ramirez, dude is 0-2 in the UFC. Also got finished on the Amos Quintero series. Yeah, but he is not cut out for the UFC. So Mitch Ramirez back to regional MMA. You know, if you get, you know, a couple good wins, you come back at 34, you can still make a run, buddy. Don't blink. Following that, we had, you know, unfortunately, I hate this that I missed this prediction, but I'm not too mad about it. Valter Walker, 54-second, third straight heel hook on Kennedy Inchukwu. And literally, just exactly how I predicted this fight to go, Kennedy was either going to survive the first takedown attempt or he was going to get submitted. And little did we know that he was exactly that, going to get submitted. So that is right. Easy work. Easy work. Kennedy Inchukwu doesn't even throw a strike. He is fighting with his arms down. Very dumb. Valter throws a big shot, clips him on the retreat, is able to shoot a takedown, fails, then is able to land it. Then decides to, instead of take the back, he decides to drop down, locks up a heel hook, and it was over. Just like that. 5 seconds. That's right. 54-second submission from Valter Walker. That's right. Three straight wins in the UFC, and they're all round one heel hooks. Cannot do much better than that, and he's not ranked right now. We have Rizvan Kuniyev, Martin Boudet, Tal Sean Teixeira, Mick Parker, Shmugaziev, Tai Tuivasa. Let's get this guy ranked. I mean, honestly, he deserves a ranked spot. Throw him in at 15. Throw him in at 14. I mean, here's an actual entertaining heavyweight going out there getting finishes, and I guarantee his next fight, he's going to be shooting for a heel hook. So, entertaining stuff from Valter Walker. As for Kennedy Inchukwu, two-fight winning streak is sadly snapped, but I do have an idea of what I want next for both of these fighters. So, for Valter Walker, I saw someone throw out the name of Muhammad Usman. I like that. I also like Mick Parkin. I think Mick Parkin could provide a very interesting matchup. Dare I say Martin Boudet as well. I also like the names Marco Sergio de Lima, Rodrigo Nascimento. There is so many people for Valter Walker. As for Kennedy Inchukwu, Ryan Spann's taking on Lucas Brazilia coming up. I would love the winner of that to take on Kennedy Inchukwu in the men's heavyweight division. I'd even love Justin Taffa if they give him another shot to take on Kennedy Inchukwu, but second performance of the night goes to Valter Walker. It was very impressive. They must not have done well on ticket sales because they only gave out two performance bonuses, and I definitely think you could have given out a couple more on the card. But good work from Valter Walker getting it done, and he is going to be close to a ranked shot coming up. Following that, our first decision of the night, Edward Mora and Lauren Murphy in the women's flyweight division. It was Lauren Murphy's retirement fight. Did you know? And sadly for her, she dropped the first two rounds. That's right. Edward Mora outstruck her, outgrappled her, out everything to her, and Lauren Murphy entered round three down on the judges' scorecards. But then she locked in one of the tightest guillotines I've seen in a while. And unfortunately, I would love to give her props for the guillotine. I gotta give props to Edward Mora for somehow surviving it, then managing to get back to the feet and winning on the feet to round out the rounds. Lauren Murphy wins the final round of her illustrious career, if you can say. But yeah, Edward Mora gets the better of her. Two straight for Edward Mora, and she is now 3-1 in the UFC. Only losses to Denise Gomez by split decision, who is ranked number 15 in the women's strawweight division. So as for women's flyweight, opportunities ahead for Edward Mora. Maybe against J.J. Aldrich after she loses to Karine Silva. So maybe the loser of Karine Silva and J.J. Aldrich, Edward Mora, can take on. But for Lauren Murphy, you know what? Tough way to end her career, 2-fight losing streak, 1-3. But in 2021, she was able to fight Valentina Shevchenko, took her to round number 4. She at one point was on a 5-fight win streak in the UFC. She holds wins over Joanne Wood, over Misha Tate, over Andre Lee. You know, not too bad. Not too bad for Lauren Murphy. 16-7, and at 41, manages to not get finished. I think we got to give her a bit of props where we can. But yeah, good stuff for Lauren Murphy. Good career. You won the final round. But yeah, outstruck 68-34 significantly, and did manage to land 2 takedowns, but was taken down twice. So Edward Mora, definitely 1 fight away from a ranked opportunity. Best of luck in retirement for Lauren Murphy. Keeping the prelims rolling, Jake Matthews really surprised me here against Chidi Inchukani. Did exactly what he needed to. Took the back, climbed on his back, locked in a rear naked choke, 1:09. The best Jake Matthews has ever looked. I gotta say, a 9th career submission win, make it his 14th career finish. This was impressive. This was very impressive. Make it 3 straight as well. 4-1 in his last 5, only losses to Michael Morales by decision. Yeah, Jake Matthews, this is definitely, I think this is better than the Andre Filio win, better than the Li Jingliang win. I mean, this is definitely the biggest win in Jake Matthews' career, especially at this point in his career at 30. Big UFC fight veteran, been here over a decade. I'm very curious to see where he goes from here. I could see big opportunities ahead for Jake Matthews. I saw people throwing out the name Kevin Holland. If he beats, Daniel Rodriguez, I love that. I really do love that. He's an unranked guy. He's a good test, and he's a perfect person for Kevin Holland to take on. I would also love if Colby Covington took him on, if Gilbert Burns took him on, but sadly, those fights are just not going to come about. But yeah, definitely someone like Kevin Holland, I could see him taking on. You even have Neil Magny taking on Alicios Lesque dos Santos, winner of that perhaps. But Jake Matthews, very impressive work. I'm excited to see where he goes next, because it's definitely going to be a big opportunity. As for Chidi Inchukani, you know, this does snap his 3-fight losing streak. First fight lost at welterweight, but hey, you know what? It happens. It happens, GD. Now, out of his 11 defeats, he's now been finished in 9 of them. I do find that hilarious. But like I said, Alicios Lesque dos Santos and Neil Magny, the loser of that, I could even see Chidi Inchukani taking on. So, Chidi Inchukani, I don't think your UFC run is over just yet, but at 36, you are going to need to get back in the win column, because getting submitted quickly like this, not a good look. But if I could have given out a performance bonus, I would have given one here to Jake Matthews. After that, we got into our final prelim of the night, and I do have to say, boys, rather disappointing. Chris Curtis, Max Griffin, not really impressive. Not really impressive. To make matters worse, I mean, it was a split decision in a fight where Chris Curtis clearly won round 2 and 3. Round 1 goes to Max Griffin. Chris Curtis just started slow. 21 significant strikes to 8. Only 8. Round 2 outstrikes him 21-17. Round 3, 35-21. So it did come down to round number 2. But yeah, I thought it was a clear Chris Curtis win. I guess according to Anthony Maness. Anthony Maness scoring it for Max Griffin made no sense. But history is not incorrect here, as Chris Curtis picks up the win by split decision. Improves to 32-12. Good stuff. Max Griffin falls to 20-12. Is now on a 2-fight losing streak. Look, Max Griffin, near in the end of his UFC run, he didn't even look that bad. If anything, Chris Curtis should take an L for this one. You know, Chidi Inchukani could also take on Max Griffin next, just to match make those two. Jake Matthews, Chris Curtis, don't really see that. I would actually rock more with Chris Curtis, Kevin Holland, maybe even Chris Curtis, Vicente Luque, maybe even Jake Matthews, Vicente Luque. I don't know. Welterweight is just so deep. So many options you could do, but yeah, rather disappointing from Chris Curtis and Max Griffin. I wasn't expecting like fight of the night quality, but nonetheless, I would have expected a bit more from those two. But yeah, prelims overall, not too bad. You do get 4 finishes, and those 4 finishes were all pretty entertaining. And with that, we transcended into the main card. And I have to say, the most shocking moment of the night was Tuco Tukos dominating Junior Tafa. Now, will Tuco Tukos go far? No. No, I don't even know where to go with him from here at light heavyweight. I legit think every other light heavyweight on the roster beats him. I don't even know who to match make him with. Maybe Ivan Aslan. Maybe we give Ivan Aslan a good fight. Maybe Ivan Erzlan, even another name to throw in out there. But yeah, Junior Tafa winning on the feet, similar to his brother Justin Tafa, gets taken down. All right, and round 1 was bad. Round 1 was bad. Tuco landed 4 takedowns, 4 minutes, 14 seconds. Round two, Junior literally had him wobbled, and Tuco pressures him against the cage, takes him down, locks in arm triangle from side control, and the night is over. And Tuco Tukoks gets his first win, like professional MMA win, in 3 years. So kudos to him. First UFC win as well. He'll improve to 11-5, and he cashes as a nice little underdog if you're looking at the underdog ratings. But yeah, Junior Tafa, he is now going to be 2-4 in the UFC and regional MMA. Clearly not ready for the big stage. He's only 28, though. You know, 2 to 3 years. 2 to 3 years, Dagestan, forget. But this sucked for Junior Tafa because he was in the best shape of his life. He got fit. He's six-pack. He's been running. He's been eating healthy. He gave up alcohol. And just not enough. Not enough. Just if you can't defend the takedowns, you're not going to go far. And in every loss he suffered, he got taken down or controlled on the fence. So tough loss. For Junior Tafa, all I can say is leave the UFC, improve on the regional scene, come back even better. For Tuco, yeah, probably going to be fed to a power puncher to, you know, give him a good finish because that was what Junior Tafa was supposed to do here. But you got a UFC win, and that's all you can say at the end of the day. And as for our other matchup beforehand, it's kind of the reverse here. Vitor Petrito successfully beat a veteran. So Austin Lane does get submitted in round number one. So with a 13-7 professional record, finished in all seven of them, yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it. UFC career will end with 1-4 and a no contest. Also went 1-1 on the contender series. But Austin Lane, good times with you, always giving us a highlight of some regard. But yeah, Vitor Petrino, dominant in his heavyweight debut. He can go far. He can go far at heavyweight. I'm pretty confident on that. Getting his second career submission. 9th career finish. Good stuff for Vitor Petrino. Make it two. Ooh, no. He's coming off a losing streak. I was thinking Gabriel Bonfim. But yeah, snaps his little two-fight losing streak and does it in impressive fashion. So where does the heavyweight go from here? You know, I would say maybe Volter Walker, but I want to see both those guys go different ways. I really do. And, you know, I brought up Ryan Spann, Lucas Brzezik, both of them former light heavyweights, could be another good option for Vitor Petrino. I also saw the name Muhammad Usman. I like Vitor Petrino versus Muhammad Usman. And if we want to throw Vitor right into the rankings, you got Martin Boudet right there. You give it to old Chris Barnett, for goodness sakes. I mean, you got a lot of options to do. Rodrigo Nascimento. Heavyweight division has a lot of unranked talent you can dibble-dabble with, but Vitor Petrino, Volter Walker, coming out on top in terms of heavyweights on this card, and I'm excited to see where the two Brazilians go from here. And Vitor, turning on the grappling, you know, instead of electing to strike, smart game plan. Good stuff from Vitor Petrino. After that, we had our fight of the night, and yeah, it was amazing. Morgan Serena, Nate Landry, I knew it would be good. I knew it would be good, but it was just as good as advertised. Morgan Cherie getting the round 3 knockout, making his 15th career knockout. Now 21 career wins, 18 finishes. Dude's low-key a killer, and I didn't even realize it. So let's just go through the fight. Round 1, Morgan Cherie outstrikes him. Outstrikes him just a bit. But then, round 2, Nate Landry pouring into Morgan Cherie, hitting him with some bad shots, having him wobbled, screaming in his face. I mean, chirping him. It was phenomenal. Nate Landry had all the momentum heading into round 3, and then Morgan Cherie was just kind of like, what am I doing? I'm literally a French international kickboxing champion. I'm literally goaded. And in 27 seconds, basically just blitzes Nate Landry, clips him over and over and over again. Nate Landry was actually showing some insane head movement, but he gets put out multiple times. Knocked out 27 seconds into round number 3. Dominant stuff from Morgan Cherie. We predicted it on Verdict. Oh, I was so happy about this. Good stuff for Morgan Cherie. Win, loss, win in his UFC tenure so far. 3-2 UFC run, and dude has just been stellar. I mean, out of his 4 UFC fights, he has had a fight of the night bonus, and now 2 fight of the night bonuses and 2 performance of the night bonuses. Morgan Cherie is a certified G. Let's get him on that Paris card. Let's turn him around for September and get him a fun featherweight matchup. As for Nate Landry, I mean, what do I tell you? Dude's never in a boring fight. Dude is never in a boring fight. He is honestly so fun. He is so much fun. I don't really know what to do with these two. I mean, a fight of the night for Morgan Cherie will definitely get you closer towards a ranked spot, but he's not really ready for a ranked spot. And, you know, losing to the Thing of Wood, losing to Chepe Mariscal has you in an interesting position. So I'm maybe thinking Giga Chikadze could be an option. Might be too high to the rankings for my liking. I saw people throw out the name Melsik Bagdasarian. Could be a fun matchup right there. Kind of tricky for Morgan. kind of tricky. You know, the next three are super easy because they're all ranked opponents. But as for Morgan and Nate, I mean, Nate will always be given fun opportunities. I'm going to throw this out there. If Patricio Pitbull loses to Dan Ige next weekend, I would love Patricio Pitbull versus Nate Landry. I think that would be a banger matchup. But Morgan is going to get a high-level unranked featherweight. It's just a matter of which one that is. Pat Sabatini could be a name. We throw in the mix, perhaps. We'll have to see. But fight of the night for sure. Is it fight of the year? Absolutely not. But it was fantastic. And watching Nate Landry dominate Morgan Cherie, come out just screaming like, yeah, it's go time to the crowd. And watching Morgan just knock him out. It's just so fun. It's the only way Nate Landry can ever lose if it's in entertaining fashion. So good stuff to Morgan Cherie. We'll see what you do next in the rest of your career. But after that, featherweight action again. Steve Garcia, Calvin Kattar. And I have to tell you, Steve Garcia is damn good. Steve Garcia is really freaking good. He made Calvin Kattar look like an amateur, and he's going to be ranked number 14 come Tuesday. 85 Sniven strikes to 26, and even knocked down Calvin Kattar in round number 3. And I want to just hit you with a fun fact right here and right now. Calvin Kattar had never been dropped in his entire UFC career, and he was dropped here by Steve Garcia. Nasty work. Nasty work from Steve, man. His boxing is crisp. I have no idea how Calvin survived round 3. I mean, he was being hit with some brutal shots. The toughness of Calvin Kattar is just wild. But Steve Garcia, you absolute animal. 6 straight wins for him. And mind you, his UFC career, he's 7-2. Like, this dude's an absolute killer. The win streak is gone. Chase Hooper, Shane Nurdambeek, Mokuz Okasa, Sung Woo Choi, Kyle Nelson, and Calvin Kattar. Dude is just speedrunning the division. He's getting a ranked opponent next. He wanted a Apex main event. Called out Yusuf Zalal. I love the Yusuf Zalal call out. They just may be having Yusuf Zalal fight someone else. I don't know. But there's also Josh Emmett. So Josh Emmett, Yusuf Zalal, both in the similar pocket here. You could even go David Onama. I think all those guys are going to be taking on each other in some regard. But definitely Steve Garcia is getting a main event opportunity next. And if he wants to go to the Apex, he can do it. As for Calvin Kattar, I don't know, guys. I don't know. I really don't know. Calvin Kattar is on a 5-fight losing streak, and he's 1-6 in his last 7. I don't know. He's 37. I honestly think he might have to be cut for his own good. Like, I don't know what to do with Calvin, because it's like, if he gets cut, where does he go from here, you know? If I'm Calvin Kattar, I think you switch it up. You know, leave the UFC, go to the PFL. Go to the PFL, try out their featherweight division, and if you can find success there, you will go far. All right, that's all I can say for Calvin, because at one point in his career, he was 22-4, okay? He's 23-10 now. That is just not right. That's just not right. And Calvin Kattar has gotten worse with every performance he has had. Since losing Max Holloway, is able to bounce back against Giga Chikadze, then I'm talking, tell you, the butterfly effect of him losing that Josh Emmett fight when he shouldn't have lost, gets injured against Arnold Allen, gets brutally outgrappled by Aljamain Sterling, doesn't look himself against Yusuf Zalal, doesn't wake up at all in this fight. Now, he was swinging until the end. I knew I'd give it to him, but he was swinging, missing, and then Steve Garcia was just pouncing on him. So, wow, sad stuff. For Calvin Kattar, I'm not even going to say who we should fight next. So how about Calvin Kattar and Morgan Cherie? There you go. Calvin Kattar, Nate Landry. Calvin Kattar, Nate Landry. There you go. Matchmake on the same card. But yeah, Steve Garcia has a big fight coming up. And dude, I'm such a Steve Garcia fan. So high on him. Good stuff there. Then the co-main event. And I'll be honest, guys. I didn't know adding to the decision. It was 50-50. I was leaning Wonderboy even though I picked Bonfim. But I am happy he gave it to Bonfim because I picked him. But yeah, Wonderboy, I don't want to say it was a robbery because, like, robberies are reserved for when it's actually like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. This was a close fight. Could have gone either man's way. Do want to throw out there round 3. 10 Sniven strikes to 7 in favor of Gabriel Bonfim. 2 of 6 on takedowns for 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Do want to throw that out there. Now, round 1 went to Bonfim. Round 2 went to Wonderboy. It was this round 3 people were debating. And do you want to say is that Wonderboy's shin did get split open? You know, Bonfim also ate all the shots that Wonderboy threw at him. I know the verdict scorecard had Wonderboy winning, but at this point, trying to break in new talent is what they were looking for. Totals from the fight, 42 Sniven strikes to 40 in favor of Wonderboy, 78 total strikes to 55 in favor of Wonderboy, 5 of 14 on takedowns for Bonfim. 5.5 minutes of control time. So Gabriel Bonfim gets the biggest win of his career. He is now going to be 18-1, and he's on a 3-fight winning streak. Amazing stuff. And mind you, he's 5-1 in the UFC, his only loss, fight of the night, to Nicholas Dalby. So Bonfim is going to be ranked probably number 12, maybe number 13 come the rankings update. And there's already people are wanting this guy to get knocked out. You know, they're throwing out the names Joaquin Buckley. I like that one. People are saying potentially Gilbert Burns could be another name. You know, there's also going to be a lot of guys losing coming up. You know, Sean Brady and Gary. Someone's going to have a loser. Leon Edwards versus Michael Morales. Someone's going to have a loser. So Bonfim is now in the mix in the men's welterweight division. And I'll be curious to see where he goes from there. But Wonderboy, you know, he is on a 3-fight losing streak. 1-5 in his last 6. But let's be real. He expressed interest in fighting on that UFC White House card. I say, save it for the White House card. Just sit out a year, man. Sit out a year, you know. I don't know who he's going to fight. I saw MMA Theory said Adesanya. I don't know what weight class they would fight at or how that would work, but I don't know. There's definitely a good fight for Wonderboy in the welterweight division. I just don't know against who, because Bonfim gave a great performance, but he's definitely going to fight a young up-and-comer. It's just a matter of whom. Really just a matter of whom, and I don't know. I really don't know. But Wonderboy, I say sit out. Have your retirement fight next summer at that UFC White House event. Yeah, that's what I say you do, Stephen Thompson. As for Bonfim, you know, big win here. Big fights ahead. If I actually had to matchmake him, let's say he debuts at 12-13, I actually think Joaquin Buckley is a perfect bounce back fight for Buckley slash a good opportunity to move up in the rankings for Bonfim. So I say book that fight next. That is what you do. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we got into the main event, and I can't believe this is controversial. Like, I can't believe this is controversial, but people are saying early stoppage. All I'm saying is Black Beast all day. Make it a 35-second knockout for Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis getting his 16th career UFC knockout, 24th career knockout. Dude's an animal. Dude's an animal. 2-fight winning streak. 1 and 1 loss in his last 4. And it's the Holton Almeida. I do want to say that Derek Lewis has just beaten every single arm wrestling contender they've thrown at him. He's currently ranked number 9. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets bumped up to 8. Wouldn't even be surprised. Dude is an absolute legend. I was so hyped for this. Fight starts immediately off the bat. You see the size difference. You see the length difference for Talashon Teixeira. Then, you know, they're kind of just like feeling each other out. Then Talashon Teixeira hits him with a jab. Now, his thumb may have grazed the eye, but Derek Lewis was holding it. Derek Lewis was holding it. And so Talashon Teixeira starts swinging. And then Derek Lewis starts swinging. And swinging. Then Derek Lewis clips him with a left. Down goes Talashon, fully on dropped. Lewis just jumps on him, okay? Laying shots. By the way, Talashon covers up on his back, holding his head. Lewis is raining shots. He uses the cage to stand himself up. By the way, still eating shots from Lewis. He's holding the cage, holding himself up, and then Herzog steps in and stops it, and then he complains and gives Herzog a little shove. I mean, come on. Come on, guys. I mean, we're all acting like this is a bad stoppage. Like, okay, dude was hurt. Dude was covered up in a predictable thing. Did he recover? Yes, but he had to grab the cage. Okay, so I saw people saying, like, oh, Herzog should have stopped the fight right there. All right, but that's literally like he's getting finished and we're just stopping the fight. So, I mean, and by the way, I've seen Sergey Pavlovich versus Derek Lewis. That's an early stoppage. So, I think this is righting the wrong of previous fights where Derek Lewis has been stopped early. So, great win for Derek Lewis. 9 significant strikes to 3 is all it takes. 35 seconds. He then gets a call from freaking President Trump, who, by the way, is messing around with the Epstein files. Don't like that, but good for him. And then he says he wants to fight his wife next and give her a little ground and pound. He also took his pants off, threw him into the crowd, took his nut cup off, threw it into the crowd, and then mooned the camera in his underwear. Derek Lewis is a national treasure. I think he deserves a title shot immediately. But yeah, it was a great way to end UFC Nashville. By the way, I had a blistering headache all day. You know, I'd been watching wrestling. I had been watching WWE and I've been watching UFC. And then this happens. I'm screaming my head off. And then once I came down from this high, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to go right to bed. I literally went straight to bed. So Derek Lewis, great stuff. As for Talashon Teixeira, you lose your first professional fight. Oh, boo-hoo. Tough stuff for Talashon Teixeira. What's Talashon going to do next? Rizwan Kuniyev. Rizvan Kuniev, Talashan Teixeira, that's a fight I desperately want to see. Now, as for Derek Lewis, he's in a really weird spot. He is in a really weird spot, and I think everyone has kind of figured out what's going to go down at heavyweight, so let's kind of matchmake. So, I think I got to say goodbye to Alex Pereira and Tom Aspinall. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Alex Pereira is going to rematch Magomed Ankalaev later in the year, and you're going to get Ciryl Gane versus Tom Aspinall. Then you're going to have Alexander Volkov versus Halton Almeida for a number one contender fight. Waldo Cortes Acosta at number 6 is, of course, taking on the number 3, Sergey Pavlovich. Now, Derek Lewis lost to Sergey Spivak, but Sergey Spivak lost to Waldo Cortes Acosta. Marcin Tybura has lost to Derek Lewis, and he has also lost to Sergey Spivak. So Marcin Tybura is probably going to be fighting down against Shamil Gaziev. So Derek Lewis has one name, a rematch 4 years in the making, a rematch that altered UFC history. Derek Lewis, Curtis Blaydes to run it back immediately. Yes. Yes, I absolutely love this. Curtis Blaydes has nothing else to do right now. He really doesn't. All right, you know, he has fought in Volkov. He's fought in Tom Aspinall. He's fought in Pavlovich. He has fought in Almeida, okay? He has fought in freaking, I don't even know, Tybura. I don't know, but Derek Lewis and Curtis Blaydes can fight, and the winner can get a title shot. I think that's what you do. And honestly, I love it because that either way, Curtis Blaydes has worked his way back to getting a title shot he has fully deserved. Little did we know he actually kind of got one against Tom Aspinall. That was interim. And as for Derek Lewis, we know he has failed time and time again against DC, against Ciryl Gane. He's just always been one fight away and just kind of choked it. And, you know, this is an opportunity to get him back to a title shot at 40 years old. It's so weird to look at him and Wonderboy both in their 40s and then just Derek Lewis looking like he's in his prime. Absolutely love him, but yes, that is what I think you should do. You should do Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blaydes. Main event later in the... It doesn't even have to be a main event. What am I saying? Make it just on a main card. Co-main event, if you will. But, yeah. Banger stuff from Derek Lewis. Early stoppage? I don't think so. At all. Didn't even feel like an early stoppage live. It felt super hype watching it live. But UFC Nashville and this main event are going to finish very high in my end of the year rankings. But that's all we got for episode 205. A lot of action, a lot of TV shows, a lot of WWE flips, a lot of UFC punches, a lot of excitement to talk about. But guys, the next time we discuss things, we're going to be talking all about UFC 318. That's right, the retirement fight of Dustin Poirier goes down. And will we predict him or will we predict Max Holloway? And what about the rest of the card? Who will we predict? You guys are going to have to tune in to find that out. But yes, also go check out my personal channel, The Zach Ruger, on YouTube. I just uploaded a ranking of the last 15 SummerSlam main events. I'd really like it if you guys share that, dropped a like, and, you know, hit me up. I would love to collab on something. But as for this episode, that's all I got. And ladies and gentlemen, you know the saying. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.